Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. Ty Hildebrand here, Dan Rubenstein over there. Solid Verbal at gmail.com, as always, is our email address. You can find us on Facebook, on FanCred, on Twitter, on Instagram. Are we on Snapchat yet? Are we going to do that?
I am on Snapchat.
Yeah.
I am on Snapchat at drubin25, D-R-U-B-E-N-2-5. I feel like eventually we should.
You just taught me how to use it this week. Literally, I had no idea how to work that weird interface.
So it's a really bad interface.
It's terrible. What is that?
Once you sort of figure out how bad it is, then eventually you can just sort of learn to appreciate it however much you can. I do a game show on there. I had Dr. Jane, our very own Dr. Jane, on the game show this past week, and it was a rousing success. We have a next week's scheme theme show. We've recorded the interview. It's with Jeff Schwartz.
Jeff Schwartz.
Great friend of the show.
Yeah.
NFL offensive lineman, now for the Detroit Lions, played at Oregon. Has his own podcast. First thing he told me when we connected before we started recording was, love your Snapchat game show. So
really?
It's good enough for an NFL offensive lineman. It's good enough for you.
See, I have nothing to snap, Dan.
No, that's not true at all.
Well, what would you like me to put out there? I'll put it out there.
So just a couple weeks ago, you sent me a picture of what you felt like was a dead ringer for Bud Elliott at Chick-fil-A. Right?
I'm really good at those. Well, I shouldn't say I'm really good. I've got like a 60% success rate when it comes to doppelgangers. So I take a lot of weird photos like that.
I don't know. Just give fun facts about Ty Hildebrand. If people are following you,
okay,
give some fun facts. Interview solid wife Kate.
Oh, God. She'd hate that, but okay.
But does she not want to be on camera?
Probably not. No.
Interview. You know what it should be? There it is. It should just be a back and forth with you and Mama H.
Yeah.
Whenever you're over there, just like 3 or 4 snaps about what Mama H thinks about this world.
Oh, God.
It disappears in 24 hours.
We had a pretty good one about the Billboard Music Awards the other day.
Yeah. You should be live snapping award shows with Mama H. How? Ty, write that down.
Yeah, that would go viral.
Forget viral. I just want it for me.
She is ruthless, Dan. Ruthless. It's where I get my mean streak.
Stress the ephemeral nature of Snapchat. If you follow Ty Hildebrand,
ephemeral. Okay,
that means it's fleeting,
right? No, I got you.
If you follow Ty Hildebrand, you should know what you're getting, and what you're getting is a saucy lady from Eastern PA tearing apart the young pop stars of today.
Yeah, that's a good intro. I like that.
She's gonna listen to this,
and she's gonna ask me, Ty, what's Snapchat? I'm gonna get it tomorrow morning. You watch.
I'm gonna raise money.
Yeah.
Take out an ad in Times Square to promote Mama H tearing apart. I'm sure she hates, what's her name? Ariana Grande. She must.
No, she's fine with Ari. She's fine with
really?
Ari. She's fine with Ari. Currently, it was Britney Spears. She tore to shreds Britney Spears.
That's a low-hanging fruit.
Low-hanging fruit, but this was like blown to smithereens, Britney Spears.
See, I like this because it's completely unpredictable where her hatred lies.
She tore apart Pink because she claims she doesn't need to swing upside down to sing, and she's tired of that act. I'm trying to think who else she tore apart. I was going to tweet all this out,
but she loves CeeLo.
She loves CeeLo. Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, she has the CeeLo Christmas album.
I love it.
Anyway, thanks for tuning in. This is a college football show, believe it or not.
Yes,
we are in the midst of our scheme theme month. Last week we didn't have a chance to do it because of a variety of scheduling mishaps. However, this week we are back on the horse.
Yes.
And we are excited to welcome back our good friend from the Pac-12 network and all sorts of places, the Elite 11, Lord knows wherever else. Yogi Roth is going to stop by to talk about all things quarterbacks with us, Dan.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. A PA native.
Yes. Lackawanna County native.
It's been a really interesting year for quarterbacks, both in terms of quarterbacks transferring away from schools, quarterbacks decommitting from schools, quarterbacks coming from schools that didn't necessarily win at the college level and are being drafted number one, number two, number five in the second round. And there's Christian Hackenberg. It's just a huge year for what the hell is going on with the quarterback position. So very interested to see what Yogi has to say about a number of issues, especially regarding the development of quarterbacks from high school to college and what the difference is between a pretty good quarterback, especially early on in his college career, and a very good quarterback. That to me is really intriguing.
One of the things that I hope Yogi touches on, and I suspect he will, he's really into the whole personal aspect of quarterback development. Not so much just quarterbacks, but as these guys progress from high school to college, how does that all happen? For some guys, it works really well. For others, it doesn't. But Yogi's always pretty in tune with what guys are up against being the big man on campus in high school and how mm-hmm. they try to transition and maybe build off that or grow from that experience as they get to the college level. It's something that I think a lot of people know in the back of their minds is out there and is a challenge for some of these guys. But right. when you see them on the field, it's easy to forget some of the other transitions they're going through on a very personal level. So I hope we can get into that a little bit as well. I'm sure we will.
Yes. And before we do, Ty, because we should get to it because it's a great conversation.
Yeah.
I feel like we need to give somebody some attention.
Let's start with a first-time sponsor here, the Solid Verbal Dan. Both you and I have purchased items from our first sponsor. It mm-hmm. is their first visit to the Solid Verbal. We are excited to welcome Bonobos aboard.
Oh,
sponsor
so great.
Train, right?
Oh, every my God.
Guy,
so excited.
Look, I was wearing Bonobos clothes today. Not kidding. Swear to God.
I like that.
Every guy, you, myself, everybody wants to look their best. But a few, like us, we want to put in a little extra effort to maintain a stylish wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
You know how inconvenient it can be, how filled with hassle it can be to walk around. Let's go see what's at this store and then at this store. If you're like me, you're a hunter, you're not a gatherer. You want to get in, you want to get out, and you want to find the goods that are to your specific style. Bonobos yes. takes the pain and hassle out of finding those stylish clothes that fit you right. They've got clothes for any body type, any fit, any preference. You can easily browse online through top quality styles in your home. Free and easy shipping and returns. I've had to return things before to Bonobos. They do a really good job. They're personable with fast service. You could try on clothes at any one of 20 or more guide shops before you buy. So you can ship clothing from a store to your home for free. They got a full line of men's clothing. It's all meticulously crafted for a better fit. Shirts for the office or for the weekend. Suits that'll fit like they've been tailored just for you. Pants and jeans, jackets, outerwear, ties, belts, shoes, even golf clothes now. All you got to do for a limited time, if you are a new customer, you can get 20% off your first order when you go to bonobos.com. That's B-O-N-O-B-O-S. B-O-N-O-B-O-S.com. Enter the code SOLID, S-O-L-I-D, SOLID, will get you 20% off your first order so you can discover the difference that an expertly crafted, better-fitting wardrobe can make. Again, that is Bonobos. We do hope you'll check them out.
Yeah, I equate it to it's a freshman quarterback going to be a junior eventually, making that leap. Make that leap to Bonobos. Next level.
All right, Dan, let's get to our guest of honor this evening. As you know, he is an analyst with the Pac-12 Network. Let's see what else. He's a filmmaker. If you haven't seen Life in a Walk yet, go on out to the interwebs. You can find it out there. He's an author. He's a TED talker. He's an accomplished guy. He's
a podcaster.
He's a podcaster. He's got all things to do with the Elite 11. He is our good friend, Yogi Roth. Yogi, how are you?
I'm inspired, man. You know, you guys are the first podcast I ever subscribed to, ever leaned in on, and it was a couple years, but I joined the fray, and I got to thank you for it, man. I've been a steady listener, and I'm fired up to be on.
It's good to have you back. So I got to ask, where have you traveled to lately? Because you're a jet setter. Where have you been?
Yeah, you know, I just got back. I got an epic trip this summer, man. I went to Europe and bounced around, started in London and Paris, Venice, and then drove all the way through Croatia and just stopped in different cities and natural parks. And it was full unplug. It was awesome. So that was, I did Cuba right after the season. And then I did this one kind of right before, because for me, the season starts with Elite 11 kind of gearing up and heading into the finals now. So it was an epic trip. And one I would highly recommend for either of you to take your significant other on, or just cruise solo if you want to go do that too.
Dan was just talking about Croatia. He's a big fan of Croatia. He's never been there.
I've never been. My parents have been. I saw Yogi's pictures. I feel like it's, I mean, yeah. Everybody knows now. The secret is out, but I that's a journey I need to make.
It's phenomenal. I mean, you think about like, everybody talks about Italy and the coast and Greece and the islands, but you know, Croatia's kind of like that sneaky squad. You know, they're like the Houston of traveling, maybe. You know, like they may not be in a power five, but you don't want to play them. You know, they're really one of those teams.
Yeah. Get up Dalmatian coast. Ain't played nobody.
We're going to be pummeled with people from Croatia who listen to the show.
Croats love quarterbacks. It sounds very similar. So Yogi obviously has an extensive background with quarterbacks, played college football, has coached high-level college football, coached quarterbacks at USC. Let's start here. Every year, the game evolves. Offenses evolve. Quarterbacking moves forward. When you look at how offenses are run now, and obviously your focus is on the Pac-12, but you do pay attention to all sorts of college football, to what degree, with offenses sort of being less and less able to be defined, pro style and sort of spread are sort of meshing together, everyone takes different kinds of offenses, are quarterbacks and what they're being asked to do sort of getting closer and closer to being sort of one thing?
I don't know that. I think that quarterbacks this year specifically, where I've seen the most in high school football, and if we rewound, and we might have talked about it last year when we went through this the quarterback conversation, but my first year at Elite 11 was 8 years ago, and I'll never forget going down to Texas and watching the quarterbacks throw that year. And every year they got better and better and better because 7-on-7 just really became this thing, and they grew and they grew. This year is the first year that I can honestly say, out of all the quarterbacks I've seen around the country as we gear up for the Elite 11 finals, there is a unique blend. It used to be pure pocket passer.
Right.
I can chunk it. I'm a big guy, 6'4", 230, one of those types of guys. And then you had your unique athlete who wasn't a great thrower, maybe 5'11", 6'1". Then you had a guy who was an okay thrower and an above average athlete. Now you're seeing above average athlete and above average passer because these student athletes are seeing it in 7th, 8th, 9th grade. They're reading coverages. They are the best athlete on the field, but they are taking drops. So to me, like this is a unique time in football. And I think Marcus started it last year going to the NFL. Mm-hmm. You keep seeing these guys get drafted. The position's changing, you know, whether guys in the league want to adapt it or not. But once that older group takes off and retires, I do think that the position has molded it and it's no longer just athlete, is no longer just passer. I think there is a hybrid now and it's making the position better in my opinion.
So one of the things that we hear time and time again is how high schools are actually leading the charge in terms of innovation. What kinds of habits do you see come your way? What kind of trends do you see from the high school level that could potentially expand at the college and NFL level and really just impact what we've grown accustomed to seeing in today's game?
You know, they're really good in space. And by that, we always talk about like quiet spaces in the pocket, you know? So can I just move subtly 6 inches and get away from that nasty three technique or that defensive lineman or somebody coming on, you know, an A-gap blitz from the linebacker depth? These quarterbacks now are so athletic that they can subtly move in the pocket and get the ball out. That's where I think they're different. You know, Dylan McCaffrey is Christian McCaffrey's younger brother. He's going to Michigan. Might be as good as anybody we've seen, and at least for me in 8 years, in the pocket. You know, having the ability to manipulate the pocket with short, subtle, but explosive movements. It's something you watch Jared Goff do, but he had to develop that in college. These kids are walking in with that. Where they're struggling, and a major issue that we try to take up with the limited time we have Elite 11, when they get to college, all these kids are in a gun. And that's fine. I totally am down with that. But what I'm not down with is not understanding timing. And I believe if I was ever going to go back and coach again, and we do this at the Elite 11 with our staff, we take every quarterback and we take them from center just to develop timing. I don't need to get on the soapbox and say, you need to be under center. You need to know how to take a drop. I'm cool if you never do at all. I mean, a lot of guys, including Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, rarely do, but their timing is so good. So I think that high school quarterbacks are missing out on the training of timing. And we have a phrase where we say your feet follow your eyes. A lot of quarterback coaches out there go the opposite way, and I completely disagree. I think if you say your eyes follow your feet, you're a hair late. I believe that your feet will follow your eyes, but you have to be trained where to see. And football is a rhythmic sport. You know, it's kind of like if you were dancing, right? You have this move, you have this this spot you're supposed to hit, and if you don't, then it kind of throws everything off, right? Same thing in quarterback, and all these spread teams, they still have to have some sort of concept, right? It's not just four verticals and a stop route on the outside and a post versus cover two. I mean, there are crossing routes, there is timing, and to me, that's the biggest detriment. So there's one positive and one negative I'm seeing. Both are enhancing the game and also forcing coaches to teach these kids. And to me, that's why you see young quarterbacks late all the time when they play. It's not because the game's so fast, because they've never been trained to throw concepts with in a timing-based system, because they've always been in the gun and just kind of catch, bounce around, and get rid of the ball. And to me, that's something that hopefully a habit that gets broken when kids either come to us and then obviously when they get to college.
I mean, you've obviously got a ton of knowledge about the quarterback position, about offenses in general. When you're watching a game from your couch, it is clearly through a different lens than that of Dan and I, and a lot of regular fans for that matter. What kinds of things do you watch for that aren't apparent to the rest of us when we're just casually watching a game at a bar or on our couches?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that fans have gotten savvier, but I always look at the game when I'm watching film in my spot. And Dan, you've been over here where I got my little dungeon down here. And I look at always from the quarterback position. When I'm even calling a game, a lot of the times I am playing the quarterback position and I'm getting the ball out. Pre-snap read, post-snap read. I mean, so much of now in the RPO, the run-pass option system, is based on that. So every year I basically try to find a new concept and really dive into it. This offseason I have gone into RPOs. If you turn on a Pac-12 Network game next year or any one of our shows, I can guarantee you I'm probably going to talk RPOs, because I understand how they work now and really where you're reading, what you're reading, what your keys are, how teams have really evolved in the run-pass option system, because it really has taken on a life of its own. To me, it's replaced the quick game, but you have to understand the timing of it. You have to understanding defenses. It's not just running out and having 10 to 12 concepts and that's all your offense is. So I guess this year when I watch, I'll be looking at that. I will totally be looking through the lens of who are they keying on and what's their read. Because, you know, for instance, if I get to the line of scrimmage and I'm to the boundary and I'm looking at the field and the three techniques away from me, it totally changes the read if it's an overfront, you know, or an underfront. I mean, it totally shifts depending upon where the defensive line is.
Right.
It totally shifts on who the overhang player is. It totally shifts then to the slot receiver's read and who was he blocking and how was he blocking him. And of course, if the quarterback is free off the defensive end or if the quarterback is reading off the back room, I mean, all those things now I've totally nerded out and really spent this offseason diving in to be able to predict where that is. So then we can run it back in a highlight and I'll circle the key or the read, or at least what I think it is in those plays. So every year, probably I try to add something new, kind of like as an athlete, right? You work on a different element of your game when you're playing. That's at least how I operated. I try to do the same thing as an analyst.
What's your resource for trying to teach yourself those types of new concepts? What do you look to if you're trying to get a better understanding of a system?
Well, I dork out, you know, like if you talk to Lewis Johnson or Kevin Calabro or David Shellman, our producer and our crew in the Pac-12, I have notes and notes and notes. You know, for a spring game at Cal, you know, I treat it like it's the national championship game. One, to develop the mentality that when I do get an opportunity, hopefully to call that game one day, it won't be too big. But also, there's so much intel you can get. So for me, the offseason's huge when I go around the conference or around the country and get to meet with these coaches. Because one, they have more time. They're a little more lenient with probably how they're teaching and what they're saying. And I'm just taking notes. So for me, I've got files and files, just like I did as a coach and just like I did as an athlete, of how can we attack these defenses? If I'm a spread team, how am I preparing to go up against Stanford? You know, I spent a lot of time at UCLA in the spring just watching them implement different schemes as they shifted from a standard spread team to more of an up-tempo, two-back, in-the-huddle type of team. So, you know, I'm leaning on coaches. I'm leaning on athletes. Our Elite 11 staff is awesome because I get what I think is the top high school developers in the country meshed with Trent, who's the NFL guy. I'm kind of the college guy. And we get to just kind of talk ball. And how are they teaching? What are kids recognizing? How are they learning, kind of most importantly? And then seeing it implemented during the couple weeks we have them. And then, of course, when I get to college, what are they doing in training camp? So I kind of nerd out in that regard, man. You know, I have a boatload of cutups that I keep and I share, and I'm always down with kind of sharing information with other analysts or talking to people involved in the game. But you kind of either competing or you're not, I think, in that regard. And I think you can get by just saying they're fast and they're strong and they're explosive, but I don't think you can last. And I know for me, you know, I'm obviously not the biggest name out there. I didn't have an All-American career, unfortunately. So I got one with knowledge. And that's what I try to do every offseason.
One of the luxuries that you have is week in and week out, you get to speak with coaches ahead of games you're calling. You travel the country, you travel the coast, talking to coaches, picking their brains, seeing where their heads are at philosophically with the offenses that they run. How different are these minds that are running, perhaps to our eyes, to everybody's eyes, similar offenses, but how different, how similar, you know, guys that are running run pass option systems, running spread systems, running pro style systems, philosophically, are they all that different in what they're trying to do and in what they tell you?
You know, I listened to your conversation with Coach Rodriguez, which, by the way, was awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. And yeah, I think like big picture, yeah, I guess they're similar philosophically if they all gave a coach's clinic, right? We want to go fast. We want as many plays as possible. In the fourth quarter, when it's late, we want to be able to run the ball. But I think they're drastically and dramatically different in how they teach, what they teach, and really how they recruit, and specifically the quarterback position. You know, I mean, some of these teams you can come in and play right now, but you know, to me, the biggest misconception, I've called the Washington State Cal game in the last couple of years.
Right.
Everybody calls it the same offense. It isn't even close. Like literally, it's not even in the same wheelhouse until
how so?
You really dive into it. How so? Well, number one, Washington State is based on so many vertical concepts in math, right? So six, five, where am I going? Where's the green grass? Cal, there's way more to do with the line of scrimmage than people gave Jared Goff credit for. There's way much more to do in the run game than was given Jared Goff credit for. So to me, it's not just four verticals and they want to get the ball downfield. Are they ridiculously complex? I don't think so, but I think that's a smart move. I think the day and age where we need to get dual right, deep short, 82 stems, Z snag on three, check, 82 stems, 82 sluggos, you win. And to me, like that has left the building. And you've seen it as NFL guys have come to college. And that was an example of two plays given to a quarterback in line of scrimmage. Georgia was an example. It was highly written about a year ago where they tried that when they brought Schottenheimer in. And to me, the biggest element of coaching is learning your learner. So to me, and to answer your question, the systems are different for sure. The philosophies generally are probably the same, but the way they teach, the way they operate is fundamentally different. Here's another example for you. You know, Oregon, they're going to go as many plays as possible. And a lot of times the players going to remain in the same position, right? In the slot, outside of the left, the boundary, whatever it may be. So they believe in that 10,000 hour, 10,000 rep rule where they want to get guys going where it's kind of second nature. Where as you look at Cal, yeah, they want to get the same reps, but they're going to move guys around a lot and they're going to be much more physical in training camp. They went live, I want to say it was like 80% of the time the first 2 weeks in training camp, where Oregon, they won't do that. You know, so totally different philosophies or totally different implementations of their approach. When you turn on the TV, you might say, oh, spread team one, spread team two. And I think that's the fun part about me going in on Fridays is sitting down with these staffs and sitting down with the players of, how do you teach? How do you observe how your players are learning? And of course, then on Saturdays, how are they, how are they performing when the lights are on?
So we're going into a season, a Pac-12 season, but really a college football season as a whole, with a couple of big quarterbacks who played as true freshmen in the Pac-12, Jake Browning and Josh Rosen. And you talked about teaching quarterbacks to play within a rhythm between their eyes and their arm and their feet. What is the difference between a quarterback, and you've certainly come across a lot of these young quarterbacks who are sort of thrust into starting pretty quickly into the either true freshman or redshirt freshman years. What is the difference between a quarterback who can understand and at least succeed at times, like Rosen and Browning did last year, and quarterbacks who are not quite ready, who are not quite as seasoned and not ready to play until perhaps sophomore, junior year?
Well, I think there's two things, and they're both great examples. One is competitive temperament. You know, you watch Jake play, you can watch the first game, rewatch it against Boise, and, you know, they didn't really do much, right? And then go watch him later in the season. I called a couple games, even week three, I think it was. They play Utah State, and he's a different guy. I called the game maybe week 8 or 9, different guy. And his competitiveness and his confidence, to me, that's like the heart and soul of a quarterback, you know? And then of course, do you have gifts? And Josh is the most gifted player, I think, at quarterback, a pure pro prospect in the country. I don't know who else he'd put ahead of him. I get Deshaun, he's insanely gifted, but Josh can hit spots. I mean, he's so talented in that regard. So I think those two things kind of separated those guys. Mm-hmm. But at times it caught up with him, right? I mean, for Josh, yeah, he's a gifted passer, but when you run up against some of these defenses and think you can get away with things, you can. And you can get your confidence shook. And that's why, you know, you didn't pick UCLA a year ago, because it's just too hard with a guy who's going through it for the first time. Now, Josh responded, of course, but when you throw a couple picks and you're down all of a sudden, it's a different ball game. And then with Jake, to me, I can't wait to see his growth. I thought that he struggled in the deep ball game at times, where he had thrived as a high school player, where he rushed things at times. I think his improvement will be as good as any player in the country from last year, this year. And he's a football junkie. You know, he really is that guy. And for Josh, Dan, it's going to be so much fun to watch him, because now it's not easy. You know, now in that system, he's got to read defenses. He's got to understand what's happening. He's got to make anticipatory throws on a different level. He's got to reset and redirect protections. He's got to have shifts in motion to be a part of it. He's got to make sure the offensive line is passing down the protection from the center to the guard to the tackle to the tight end. I mean, there's so much more on his plate, and he can thrive there. And I love that they did it, because if he can master it, and with, you know, Tui being his quarterback coach, he's going to have a chance to be a work of art this season if he could do that, because he'll have the ability to dissect some people because he's so smart above the shoulders.
Generally speaking, what does a playbook, or what does the weekly installation look like for a true freshman or a very green quarterback? And obviously it varies by the school. You know, certain schools will only run a handful of plays, and, you know, with different looks, some schools will throw a lot more at teams. I know a lot of Texas fans are anticipating, it's Shane Buechele, I think that's how you pronounce it, him to step in as a very green quarterback and run an offense that a lot is expected of after their struggles these past couple seasons. How much is thrown at these guys early on?
Well, I'm a big believer that, you know, the potential is boundless and endless of anyone on the planet, but specifically quarterbacks. So they go big, they go hard. Now, to me, it's how you teach it. You know, when I was coaching, I was the guy who took the young guys. Okay, how are we going to slowly, subtly make sure they learn all this? Now, when they get in the meeting with all the other guys and the veterans, like, it doesn't slow down. You know, it's just continually teaching. So for me, there's a couple elements. One is you throw everything at them, but you have to fully take advantage of what the NCAA allows. And in the off season now, you're allowed 8 hours a week to work out, and two of them can deal with the coaching staff. Now, there's no ball, but that could be in the meeting room. That could be out on the field. You could use a towel. Whatever it is you want to do, to me, that time is insanely important. Now, it's a bummer on one hand, because coaches like a little vacation time in the off season, and then got to go recruiting in May. There's not a lot of windows there, especially with summer camps, but you got to take advantage of it. And I think that's where you're going to see some guys really grow and evolve and take advantage of that. And you could obviously understand why they would do that. But the important thing is, once you get into the season, I'll steal the story from the Saints. When Sean Payton got there, he was with Johnny Morton, who was the receiver coach, used to be the OC at SC when I was there. And they sat down with Drew and they said, all right, the run game is a run game, but in the throw game, what do you love? And they literally went through every concept. All right, on third down, you like 3x1 formations, if we're on the left hash? Yeah, okay. You like out to the boundary? Yeah. Do you want to call it okie or out? I want to call it okie. Okay, cool. This is in. For instance, do you like double comebacks with the seam down the middle? Maybe not. That's out. And to me, that's what you have to do with young quarterbacks, let alone all quarterbacks, and literally tailor the game plan to what they like. And you'll hear it. I mean, it's kind of, we can predict how press conferences go in the season, right? I mean, everybody's jacked in the beginning, and then come about week 5 or 6, a team loses a game they're not supposed to, and the quotes afterwards are, we need to simplify. And coaches can kind of get jacked up and say, oh, we're going to try this, or we're going to try that. And you only practice it 3 to 5 times at most during the week, that rep. So especially if you're a young guy, to me, that's where coaches have to police themselves. And usually everybody does a nice job of it. That's to me how I would do it, and make everything pure progression, you know. And by that, I mean 1 to 2 to 3, not a ton of pre-snap reads. Like, I don't think Josh Rosen would have been best served if they ran what they're going to run this year. Last year, he wouldn't have picked it up as fast. So he would have picked it up, but I don't think he would have picked it up with as much depth as he does in year two, just because there's so much speed. There's such a difference. There's so much going on, and it's for the very first time. And I don't think that we give enough credit to the very first time, you know, Shane Buechele takes a snap. You know, he might miss. He might airmail a post that's wide open versus cover zero. It's his first time. You know, that's going to happen, but sometimes you only get one of those in a game, and you can't miss it. So, that's kind of my recipe for young quarterbacks.
Yogi, one of the great challenges in football, really at any level, is projecting a guy's skill set or projecting a guy from one system as he moves to another. It's something that I think we're going to hear a lot about when it comes to Jared Goff. No doubt it's something we'll hear a lot about as many of the guys you're coaching in Elite 11 move up to the college level. How do you project guys forward? What is it that you look for? Are there common denominators? Are there any North Stars out there that you look at and say, all right, I think this guy can play in this system. I'm not so sure about another guy.
It's a great question. You know, we kind of, you know, if you're on like a coaching staff or you guys do, and you're just kind of sitting around BSing and kind of go through the classes and you're like, man, I missed on that guy. Oh man, we nailed it on that guy. You know, I mean, Jake Rodriguez is the guy that I was on the table for. I called him the next Mark Sanchez,
right.
But he went to Oregon. Probably in hindsight, wasn't the best fit for him. So I think that it's hard to project dependent upon the system where guys go. I mean, let's look at Brad Kaya. I mean, if you really rewind it, he goes as a true freshman. Love him coming out of high school. Kevin Olsen, supposed to be the guy there. They had the transfer from Memphis, whose name I'm forgetting. He started as a true freshman there, tears his knee.
Ryan Anderson, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Ryan Williams.
Yeah.
So he's out. Olsen gets kicked out of school and now all of a sudden he's a starter. I mean, if it's the other way, and let's just say Williams plays, Olsen's a starter. Right now we could be talking about, Brad Kaya transferring, right? I mean, you just never know. Like, who knows? He might have never even sniffed the field. I mean, I would doubt it because he's so gifted, but to me, it's hard to project. But what are the things? What are the North Stars? Number one, as I referenced before, you have to have an insane competitive temperament. I mean, you have to love what you do for the game versus what the game does you. It's one of the first questions I ask every quarterback. And now in this era of uber popularity, of my Instagram handle, of my following, it's hard for 17-year-olds, let alone with college kids, to handle that or navigate it. So to us as a staff, that's the first thing we hit these guys with. I mean, we're going to talk to them about who they think they are and who they're truly projecting. I mean, last year was classic, man. We did it with the top quarterbacks in the country. We had them write down who they think they are. And then we did a social media study on each one. And we blew their minds when we let them know what they favorited, what they retweeted, who they actually were saying they were, right? Whether it was about girls, partying, who knows what it is, and just to give them a taste of what it's like when you go to the next level, let alone level. So that's one and two. And then when it comes to the football, I think you have to be able to control the ball. I really think you have to be able to hit spots in football to play big time and be big time. You've got to hit the left shoulder so he can run away from that linebacker going over his right. You have to be able to, two, control the environment. So be able to walk into a hostile environment and not flinch. Three, I think you have to be able to control your mind. With so many things that are going on, do you have the mental discipline? And whether it's the discipline to say, hey, I need help, or it's the discipline to be able to operate when things are getting hairy, when pressure happens. Because the reality is, the only guy that feels the same pressure as the head coach is the quarterback. And, you know, Trent calls it the burden of influence. And I love that line and love stealing it because it's true. You have to embrace that. You're the only guy who, Shane Buechele, you know, they have the power to fire the head coach and fire the secretary and ignite a fan base. That's a burden. You better embrace that if you become the starter at Texas, let alone anywhere else. And then, of course, for me, the final is, can you have fun? You know, I think you got to be able to remind yourself that it's a game. And it's hard for an 18, 19-year-old kid to do all those things. So that's why I believe the quarterback coach is so vital and the mentorship that goes on at that position.
So to that end, let me ask you this. How should fans examine the curious case of Christian Hackenberg? Because his situation was not unique to college football, because you see it all the time, right? A guy's recruited into one system and then something happens and all of a sudden he's playing in another. How do you evaluate whether a situation like that is more of a player thing, a quote-unquote player thing, or a quote-unquote scheme thing?
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, without being in there, and I've known Christian for a long time and absolutely love this young man. I think he's going to thrive. And of course, as a PA guy, you got to love him, right?
Sure.
But I do think this, quarterbacks now, right? If you brought somebody on your podcast, Jack Sears, right? To me, he's top five quarterback. I'm going to probably go somewhere. He's going to go anywhere he wants. He's a San Clemente kid, huge recruit, Elite 11 kid. He's awesome. He's going to give you amazing answers, and they're going to be PC, and they're going to be almost politician-like, you know? And I think that's the lens that most quarterbacks come into college with, because there's so much attention to them. There's so much recruiting. There's so many eyeballs. There's so much media. And then they get there, and maybe they have success. Let's talk about Christian, right? Obviously crushes it as a true freshman, and he's rolling. He's projected, I think, after his freshman year, to be the number one pick two years later. And then the coaching change happens. And when you go through that, at least for him, to me, sometimes you can try to control too much, and you can start to harbor way too much. Number one, I'm going to control the system. How can I make it in my mind similar to last year? We called it this, they call it that. How can I find a blend? Well, number one, on the field standpoint, not playing fast. Two, the reality of his situation, right? Terrible, but they struggled on the offensive line. He got hit a ton. Hung in there, tried not to let his frustration show, but clearly they came out in time. That's called just growing up and going through the growing pains that you didn't necessarily go through as a true freshman, right? And then finally, I think that a lot of times, him specifically, the emotion of losing a guy like that is hard to let go. You know, it's kind of like if your girlfriend bails, you're like, yeah, be bummed for a couple of weeks. You got to move on. Mm-hmm. You can't keep thinking about it. And I think for him, it was so good as a freshman. It was, you know, he's such a great relationship with him. They've been through so much with the sanctions, et cetera. He obviously played at a high level. No one could have predicted what was going to happen with him the next 2 years. Number one, probably nobody predicted the offensive line struggles they'd have. Nobody predicted the system struggles they would have or he would have. And nobody probably predicted the scrutiny that he would be under. And to me, that's a lot for a kid to handle, you know, and he's a guy who's, you know, not afraid to put his head down and go to work. I mean, that's kind of him, you know, he's the ultimate grinder, loves the game, loves everything about it. And it's a bummer to hear some of the reports, at least when the draft was coming up about him and that relationship. And I don't know that relationship with him and Coach Franklin, but I do know that Christian's one of the more steadfast workers I've ever been around. He's definitely one of the more talented guys. And I think when you break down his tape, it's way different than when you evaluate hits and misses. And when you really can give it, you know, however you score your film when you watch it, where do things break down? Why did he miss a guy? To me, that you come out with a different grading than you do if you just go off of stats and who he was supposed to complete the ball to and he didn't because the pocket collapsed. So I go all in on him. I think if it was a unique situation in college football, one that caught a ton of flack and he did, but to me, what I love about him, man, honestly, he didn't flinch from it. He didn't back away from it for a heartbeat. And, that's kind of always been him. Just like when I went down to Penn State, he was with us at Elite 11 that afternoon, phone blown up, every coach in the country's calling him and he didn't flinch for a second. And I think that's going to bode extremely well for him in the National Football League.
So before we hit record, I asked you if you had read a piece in Sports Illustrated a week or two ago from Robert Klemko, who wrote about how NFL quarterbacks are made. And he took a look at the sort of top 15 prospects going into this year's NFL draft. And you had not read it. You were busy gallivanting in Croatia, which is the right move, by the way. But was wondering what you thought. There were some numbers that that Robert Klemko, who did a great job with the piece, sort of looked at in regards to how quarterbacks are sort of supported and their backgrounds and the resources that they have at their disposal, and not just sort of financial, but also parental and the environment that they come out of. And he found that 13 of the 15 quarterbacks grew up in homes that were valued near or above the median home value in their respective state. 13 of 15 quarterbacks in the draft spent their early childhoods in two-parent homes. On average, the 15 quarterbacks taken in the draft began playing the position at age 9, with only two having taken up the position in high school. And at some point before high school graduation, with many paying specific fees or traveling great distances to do so, 12 of the 15 received varying degrees of individual instruction from a quarterback coach who wasn't a parent or a team-affiliated coach. Do any of those numbers or trends surprise you as somebody who is around top quarterback prospects?
Not really. You know, I mean, I'm almost done interviewing all the kids coming to the Elite 11 finals. And we don't talk about recruiting because, you know, who cares? You know, who knows how that's going to shake out? We talk about the background, mm-hmm. you know, what they do off the field, who their influencers are. And even the ones that parents aren't together, they're always around one another.
Right.
You know, so that one doesn't shock me. I mean, even when I was coaching, you could tell for the most part, a lot of times how kids grew up, you know, regarding how they dealt with hard coaching. You know, you had to, again, I use this phrase a couple times on this, but learn your learner, you know? So yeah, I'm not surprised by that. But what I do love is that it's not 100%.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, that's what is 100%. But I do think at this position, I've met a lot of guys over the years, Deshaun Watson being one of them, that didn't come from the greatest environment in the history sure. of the world. You know, Jameis being another one. And, you know, you can look at their career on and off the field and give an opinion on it for sure. But, yeah, no, I'm not shocked. I mean, you know, guys that are pretty even keel come from an even keel background to a large degree, but also guys that have gone through great adversity. You know, Manny Wilkins is one. He's probably going to start at Arizona State. He's got what his story is. If you guys haven't heard, in terms of how he grew up and then he moved to Northern California with his extended family, he was going down a bad road and completely shifted his life. So yeah, he won't be in that stat if he gets drafted one day in terms of being the majority, but I do. It's a cool study and I can't wait to dive into the article.
Excellent. And what is that line though? Because we see stories about, and you helicopter dads, helicopter moms, whatever. How often do you see that with talented quarterbacks who have the world in front of them, but, you know, perhaps strings are being pulled a little bit too aggressively?
Yeah, no, you see it, man. It's a real deal for sure. You see it. And a lot of the times what I've noticed is that the parent doesn't even recognize how intense they're being, you know, and how involved they're being and how their son just needs a little space. The fun part about being a part of this documentary we do on the Elite 11 is that you hear these stories and how close kids are to their families. And I always go with the follow-up of, all right, so what's that relationship like your dad? Well, he's really pushed me a lot. Well, what does that mean? You know, what does that feel like? Do you like that? Yeah, it's just kind of their normal to a degree. But that's a story that a lot of times I won't tell or go down the road in the film because you can tell sometimes these kids just want to be out on their own for a minute, you know, and let's let them develop and evolve and see what it's like. And we've talked to parents a bunch and sometimes they're aware of it. Sometimes they're not, you know, I had a specific conversation 2 years ago with a parent at the opening. His son was one of the biggest recruits in the country and he hadn't had fun for a long time and then finally started enjoying himself. And I asked the parent after a day where his son just lit it up on the field. I said, what's the first thing you guys talk about in the car on the way home from 7-on-7 or private workouts, et cetera? Because we always talk football. I go, well, why don't you just ask him how much fun he's having? You know, change up the first conversation. And it was just a thing that the parent wasn't aware of. Because, look, we're not parents yet, but all parents want to do is provide for their kids and give them the best opportunity. And sometimes in the world of sport, they don't know any better. And then all of a sudden, before they even know it, they're living vicariously and they're all over their kid. And the kid's not having any fun anymore. And we get to see that, I think, at Elite 11 in a cool way. And get to talk to the parents about it. We talk to the parents about it before every camp. But yeah, man, it's real. I think it's in every sport, to be quite honest, and it's at every position.
Sure.
But the quarterback one, to me, it's always funny. You know, you see the kid and you see the parent, and you can tell where the kid's committed because the parent's got all the gear on. You know, and that's just it's just a proud pop or a proud mom, and hopefully they're letting their kid breathe a little bit.
Something along those same lines, and you hear coaches talk about it more and more, especially with quarterbacks that they recruit, is that they really like quarterbacks who play other sports, that don't enroll early so they can go to prom and just sort of become a well-rounded person. And eventually that is going to help them become better quarterbacks. Why is that? And I'm assuming, because you as well played multiple sports in high school, why is that the case? Why is that coveted so much, even in the world of specialization with camps and private instruction?
Well, I'm not a fan of you know, just playing one sport. I'm not a fan of just running one route, and I'm not a fan of just throwing one route. You know, I think you have to have a variety in those sports. You know, if you're playing point guard, you know, you'd be Sam Darnold, you know, a guy competing for the job at SC. I don't know if he's going to win it this year, but when he plays, he's going to crush it. He's got to play hoops. And to me, there's a huge element of hoops when you're running some of these up-tempo type offenses. Because kind of like the guard, you got to see the assist before the assist. You know, you got to see that third window before he breaks out of the first window on a crossing route. You know, so there's elements of that. I think there's elements of understanding different roles on a team instead of just being the quarterback. I think more importantly is probably just the refreshing element to get away from the game. You know, I listened to a conversation with Aaron Rodgers the other day, and he talked about after the season just getting away and how vital that is. And if you talk to sports psychologists, they would talk about, you know, the scientific mind and how you need to replace the serotonin in your brain and your creativity as a quarterback, and you've got to take some time off. And in this era, there isn't really a lot of time off. It's the season to 7-on-7 to Elite 11 to training camp. Like, it's a little too much in my opinion. So yeah, I totally subscribe to athletes. I think coaches, they love the idea of kids playing multiple sports, but not necessarily their senior year. I've never met one coach who doesn't want his quarterback to come in and enroll early.
Right.
And I would agree, especially if you can compete everywhere outside of Stanford, right? And a couple of the pro style systems where you just don't have a chance, in my opinion, to come in and play as a true freshman.
Right.
Don't come in mid year, but everywhere else where you literally have a chance, you're getting 15 practices, you know, up to 2,000 reps within a system. I mean, it's insanely valuable, even if you're going to redshirt, but then have a chance to start the next year. So I get wanting to play multiple sports.
And once again, though,
thing has changed the game.
Once again, what sport prepared Josh Rosen?
Yeah, tennis. You know,
that would be tennis, Ty.
Footwork, right?
I'll tell you what, I talked to so much. This year's Elite 11, it's like every other kid's a tennis player.
Yes.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, the kid going to Stanford, he grew up kind of playing tennis a ton. His sisters play tennis in college now, ridiculously talented player. Mac Jones, kid going to Kentucky, he grew up playing tennis. So I can't believe it. I'm like, man, every other kid, I swear, is a tennis player at some point in their life. But I think Josh is fascinating. And you guys have obviously talked to Bruce and read his book. But when you're a tennis player, you're such on an island. Mm-hmm. And I think it does a ton of good. And I'm sure there's elements of the negative as well. But here you are, number one, mechanically, it's a great way to develop your stroke. And then, of course, to be out on an island and be a competitor, have all the eyes on you is huge. And then there's the desire to be part of a team, which is why Josh left tennis. And I think it's interesting. I can't believe you say that, because I literally am on the phone with these kids and I'm like, damn, another tennis player. Like, I play tennis. So I feel like maybe I could be a quarterback now, Dan. I don't know.
Why don't they go into tennis? We need good American tennis players, too.
That's true.
Well, That's a bigger
Yogi.
Discussion. That's like soccer, right?
Right.
Like, we need our best, you know, if our best athletes played soccer, we'd be winning the World Cup.
Ty, yeah, you can draw a direct line between Dan Rubenstein recruited to play JV quarterback for Calabasas High in 2002. No, excuse me, in 1998 to the fact that Calabasas is now one of the most talented high school football programs in the nation. Direct line.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
That's all I got.
You mentioned Elite 11, Yogi. Let's get you out of here on this. I know you can't tell me who's going to win because you honestly don't know, but what are some names that you're very excited about and some names that people out there listening should be excited about as well?
I'm jacked about every kid, to be quite honest. I know that's like the worst answer of all time, and I'll get off the fence, but you know, we've such a great blend. And that's what's cool about, you know, student sports and our staff and Dilfer and everybody is, you know, everybody dives in. You know, we treat this thing like it's the NFL draft. You know, like, we dive into the kids. We got a group doing all the research on their social media. We got, obviously, the football covered. You know, you got me diving into the storylines of our production crew. You know, we know these kids ridiculously well, you know, before we even meet them. So that's kind of fun. But I'm excited to see Tate Martell. You know, he's a huge name out of Bishop Gorman. He was committed to A&M. And I can't wait to talk to him. You know, he's been on an interesting journey. It seems like you just watch your social media. You know, it's completely shifted from being ridiculously out there to now the narrative has changed. So excited to see him compete. Excited to see what his mentality is like. So he's a fun one. Jake Allen, excited to see him. He's committed to Florida. Kind of the first guy Doug Nussmeier got to really dive into. He seems pretty interesting. Sean Robinson, He's a guy committed to TCU. Think Deshaun Watson around him, you know, Jack to watch him compete. Jake Fromm, he's going to Georgia, was an Alabama commit. He's kind of like the guy who doesn't do any social media. He's a total country kid. He hunts and he fishes. He's got that personality. Davis Mills is a kid going to Stanford. Sam Ellinger, you're going to love his story in the film. It's a beautiful story about him having to become the man of the house early on. You know, unfortunately, he lost his dad when he was 13. And he's just got a different maturity about him. You know, you talk to him and he's not about some of the things that these other quarterbacks are about. So there's a lot of great stories out there. Jack Sears, you're going to love. Dylan McCaffrey, Tua Tagovailoa going to Alabama. I mean, the competition is going to be fierce, man, like it is every year. Personalities are drastically and dramatically different. But we call it, you know, football heaven for a reason. You know, these kids are going to get exposed to the best mental training in the country with Dr. Michael Gervais, the guy that, you know, you're aware of, works at the Hawks. He's been with us for about 5 or 6 years. I think Trent and George and all of our staff, Matt James, they're as good as anybody teaching the position. And then we'll be able to expose them some different conversation. You know, Alexis Jones comes in every year. We'll definitely, it'll be unique. And I think it's hopefully something these kids remember. We'll see the top 11 on. We'll bring them up to the opening, see if we can gash some of these defenses up there in July.
Final question, and this will be the most important question you were asked perhaps all month. You were at last year's Heisman Trophy ceremony, New York City.
Yes.
I'm going to need a name from you. You study film. You know teams. You speak with coaches. Our watch list is not released until, I believe, early to mid-August, somewhere early on in fall camp. So I'm going to need one name from you that will appear on our watch list of somebody, a large offensive or defensive lineman, who you feel either by happenstance, scooping up a fumble or intercepting a pass or getting in on a trick play on offense, is going to be Heisman Trophy worthy. Give me a name.
I'll tell you what. I think just because I think that the Heisman guys will be looking down on this guy. And I think you want this individual due to his charisma, due to the vibe that he has,
sure,
due to his sheer size and ability to probably enjoy, dominate, and embrace the pie. Mm-hmm. I just think Zach Banner is going to pick up a fumble this year. I just think something amazing is going to happen for Zach Banner at SC. He's so funny. You remember when he got stuck in the elevator?
In the elevator, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that he's a guy you want there. You know, he's a guy I'd politic for. I wouldn't be surprised if he joins the board of directors when his career is over. I think he might be the future of the Heisman.
He's consider him on the list. I'm only the number two in the Heisman Trust. but I have enough swag. Zach Banner, welcome to the Heisman Trophy watch list.
I can't wait to. I hope I can get a media pass this year to be a repeat guest. I'm fired up for that.
And, you'll be there.
It was an awesome event. I got to give you guys a ton of love, man. It was fun, but it was serious. And to see that young man, I can't believe his name is escaping me.
Ashton Henderson. Yeah,
he had so much fun. His parents were so jacked. He had all the swag in the world. I can only imagine what he did that night. And I do think this year, you got to step up your game and almost like follow whoever wins all evening long. Like, they don't get a choice. Wherever they go, whatever club they end up going to, or whatever, however they celebrate, I think we got to be there and capture that.
We want to make sure schools realize that we're not plying student athletes with alcohol in New York City.
No, not at all. Not at all. I couldn't agree more with that. But he was having fun, whether he was walking through.
Oh, he had a great time.
Yeah, he was loving it, man. So
he wanted to marry the receptionist at Vox Media.
That is accurate.
He was all in. All right. Yogi Roth, thank you very much for your time. Elite 11, Life in a Walk. Check it out on iTunes. Life Without Limits is the name of the podcast, correct?
Yeah, I got to get you guys on that.
Done. Life Without Limits is the podcast. Elite 11 coming up. Pac-12 Network. The man does not sleep.
Thanks, Doug. I appreciate the time. I'm a huge fan. Remember, first time I ever subscribed with you guys. I love it. I listen every episode.
Yes! All right, Dan, that's Yogi Roth from Pac-12 Network and Elite 11 and filmmaker and author. All
so
sorts
great.
Of good stuff. A really optimistic guy. We appreciate having Yogi on the program. Very quickly, though, we do have another sponsor to get through before we let you off the hook. Stand up, Dan. I want you to think about the most influential person in your life. A couple characteristics that make that person unique or interesting.
Yep.
How hard is it for you to buy something for that individual that is both meaningful and personal?
Very difficult. I will say very difficult. I could use a tip.
So we got Father's Day coming up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Give Papa Rubes something to brag about this year, besides you, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But get him something at touchofmodern.com. Touchofmodern.com. Excuse me. Go there now.
That's a great idea.
It's a great site for gifts for dad or for yourself. Timeless and unique products that have a story. Every time you go to the site, it's kind of like being a kid in a candy store because they've got cool stuff at unbeatable prices. We've both used the site before. We're both going to use the site again. We say it every time we do this sponsorship, but it's cool stuff, man. I mean, it really is neat stuff. It's fun to just go and browse.
It's so cool.
And oftentimes I find myself wanting to pick up something else, and I've done it. So you should too. If you head on out to touchofmodern.com, you'll find that they've got all sorts of cool stuff, tactical gear, rugged tools, men's fashion, jaw-dropping tech gadgets and gear, all sorts of neat stuff. Literally sales launching every day at touchofmodern.com, the one website you can go to elevate your lifestyle in a single click. Right now, our listeners get immediate access to those deals and more when they sign up at touchofmodern.com. Do it today because tomorrow it'll be different. That is, after all, how life rolls in the fast lane, Dan.
You nailed it.
Thank you. All right. Big thanks to our guest of honor this evening, Yogi Roth. We know he'll be back on the program at some point in the very near future. We always enjoy having him on. And best of luck to everyone at Elite 11, Dan. I do hope you'll have a good weekend.
You too.
Very nice here, Memorial Day weekend. To everyone out there, whether you're traveling or going to a picnic at home, enjoy your holiday weekend. We will be back next Wednesday. We're going to continue talking during our scheme theme month about all things schemes next week. Let's talk a little offensive line, shall we?
Oh, so excited.
On that note, for that go over there, Dan Rubenstein, enjoy your week. Enjoy your weekend. Catch you next week and stay solid.
Peace.